Welcome to Experiments in Advisor Marketing. I'm your host, Taylor Schulte, and today I'm sharing five more of my favorite tech and marketing tools. Get this, 26% of users who sign up for your email newsletter or lead magnet or free video series, whatever it is you're giving away, 26% of them will never confirm their email address. Well, one of our listeners shared a free tool with me to change that. And that's just one of the tech tools that I'll be talking about today, telling you what it is and exactly how I'm using it. If you love using technology to save time, improve business growth, and improve your marketing results, and really just create an overall better consumer experience, today's episode is for you. Also, really quick, Snappy Kraken, the email marketing company for financial advisors, has been making waves these days. I'm sure you've heard of them. I've just been getting tons of questions from advisors about the platform, asking if it works, is it worth it, all that stuff. And my answer is I really don't know, but we're all going to find out together because next month, Robert Sophia, the founder and CEO of Snappy, will be joining me on this podcast to talk about the details of a six-month experiment that I'm going to be running with them. I'll be sharing every step of my journey, live results, lessons learned. I'll be sharing everything. If you have any specific questions about Snappy or you want to make sure that we include something specific in the experiment, just head over to taylorschulte.com and send me a message through the contact form. I know I hate contact forms too, but it makes things really easy, and I promise I read and respond to every single message. For all the links and resources mentioned in today's episode, head over to taylorschulte.com/13.
Yes, I love technology, but not as much as you see. But I still love technology. Always and forever.
It's true. I love technology. Not as much as I love you guys, but I do love me some tech. Technology can save us time, it can improve our business, and most importantly, the thing that I love is that it creates better user experiences, but it can also distract us. It can easily become avoidance behavior. Actually, I'd probably argue that more often than not, technology is avoidance behavior, at least for me. When I started my first podcast in 2017, instead of just buying a cheap $30 microphone and hitting the record button, or just using my iPhone and hitting the record button on the native app there, I went and I spent $6,000 on branding and marketing and hiring this firm and researching equipment and technology and all this stuff. Instead of doing the actual hard work that was needed, I just got caught up in all this fun stuff, and it really became a giant distraction. I'll let you guys in on a little secret here. Sometimes when I record this very podcast right here, I use a cheap $30 USB microphone headset thing from Amazon, and you probably can't tell the difference. So my point is that you don't need technology in order to be successful in your business or marketing. My good friend Matt Jarvis is a great example of this. $1 million plus revenue firm, rapidly growing, heavy focus on tax and financial planning. He's one of the best planners I know, yet he doesn't use any financial planning software. No eMoney, no MoneyGuide Pro, none of that stuff. In fact, when I met him a couple of years ago, his office was still manually scheduling phone calls and meetings with prospects and clients, going back and forth, trying to coordinate calendars. I couldn't believe it. I said, "Look, dude, if you want to be friends with me, you have to adopt a scheduling software." Not really. It did not go like that at all. I probably begged Matt to be my friend, but he did eventually adopt Acuity Scheduling, which is what I use. And I talked about it at length in the very first episode of this podcast. He adopted Acuity Scheduling, and it was a game changer for his office, his team, his clients, everybody. What it did is it optimized his existing workflows and processes, but it wasn't required in order for him to be successful. That's the key. He already had systems, good systems and processes in place. He had already done the hard work. This piece of technology just helped to take it to the next level and optimize it. So that's my disclaimer. Before you go and download and buy the tools that I'm talking about today, ask yourself, is this where I need to be spending my time right now? Am I avoiding the hard work? Is this new tech tool going to improve and optimize my current system? Or am I just lying to myself and thinking like this is going to cut a corner here and prevent me from having to create a system at all? So with that out of the way, let's get to it. Tech tool number one is Loom, plus a little bonus here, Vitaid Webcam. I hope you've heard of Loom by now. I'm putting it at number one just in case you haven't, because I don't want you to miss out on this. I ignored it for way too long and I'm kicking myself. I found cheaper options and easier, or what I thought was easier options, and just ignore all that. Loom is really amazing. Loom says that we talk up to 6 times faster than we type. They also have a study that says that we remember 95% of a message when it's watched, versus only 10% of when we read something. So here's what Loom is. Loom, you can capture your screen, your computer screen, your voice, audio, and your face, your video, separately or all together at the same time. And then most importantly, you can embed that recording into an email and you can send it out. So here are a few use cases. One, you meet with a new prospect, they come into your office, and after they leave, instead of sending that boring email recap, you go to the Loom app and you record a personalized 2-minute video for them, and you embed it in a thumbnail and you email it to them and fire it off. And you say, "Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, it was really great meeting you today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day, blah, blah, blah." Whatever your message is, 99% of advisors are not doing this. So if this prospect is interviewing 3 firms, chances are the other 2 firms aren't doing this. It's a very easy way for us little guys to stand out against some of the bigger competition. A second use case is with existing clients. I know my friend Justin Castelli uses Loom to send birthday messages to his clients. How many advisors are regularly sending video messages to clients on their birthdays? I don't know of any. I'm sure there are some, but I don't know of many. Another good friend of mine and fellow advisor, Adam Schmela, he sends short Loom videos to clients after he meets with them, recapping everything that they just talked about. It's such a nice touch, and it saves Adam time from having to type out an email, and it just creates an overall better experience for the client, which means higher retention rates, more referrals, all that good stuff. Another use case, one that I used just recently, is to use Loom to introduce myself to a group of people that I'm going to speak to. So, and you can apply this to a client webinar or a prospecting webinar or a live presentation that you're giving yourself. Here's the deal. Instead of wasting the first 5 to 10 minutes of that presentation giving them my bio and here's about me and here's where I work and all that stuff, or sending like a very boring PDF bio that I know nobody's going to read, what I did ahead of this presentation, and it went over so well, is I recorded a short Loom video introducing myself a few weeks before the event, and I emailed it out to all the attendees. And they got to see me, they got to see my face, they got to see my mannerisms, hear my voice, they got to learn a little bit about me, and know that when I join them for my presentation, we don't have to discuss any of that. Like, we can just get right into the good stuff. So it was a really cool, unique way. I don't know if it's unique, but a good use case at least to use Loom ahead of these presentations, introduce yourself, get that out of the way, let them watch that on their own time. And then that way, when you go to present, you can just get right to the meat of it. Lastly, another idea is to use Loom. And again, there are other tools out there like Snagit, and I don't know, I'm drawing a blank on some of the other ones. But another idea is to create screen share videos for clients showing them how to do certain things. And then you can add those screen shares to your workflows so that your team can use them and repurpose them for future clients. So maybe you create a short Loom video plus a screen share showing new clients how to use the eMoney client vault, or how to read their first performance report. Or maybe you don't use performance reports and you just do a short video showing them how to read their Fidelity statement or their Schwab statement. Or even, like, I know some offices will provide directions like how to get to our office, or parking's a little tricky or something like that. You could record a short Loom video showing people where to park and how to get to your office. The list goes on. Like, you could use this a gazillion different ways. You can also use it internally as a training tool. I could record a short video for a new employee showing them how we use Text Expander, for example, or how to upload and publish a blog post. So you can use these as training tools and repurpose them and use them in the future. A few other cool things about Loom that makes it unique is viewers of your video can leave emojis, which sounds kind of funny, but they can leave emojis at different points in the video, which I can then use as markers for something that they found interesting. So if I get a thumbs up or a smiley face or something like that, it tells me where that was left in the video. So I know, oh, they found that interesting, or they liked that. So that could be helpful. They can also leave comments, kind of like a YouTube video. So they can make comments, "Hey, I really like that," or "I have a question about this." And then what I really appreciate is you can choose, Loom gives you the option, the user the option, to watch the video at 1x speed, 1.5x speed, 1.7, 2x speed, whatever, which is increasingly popular and again, helps people to save time. So I think that's a neat feature that they added there. I only have two real criticisms of Loom. One, I hate that it takes people out of our ecosystem. I'd prefer for these videos to live on our domain so that we can stay front and center in front of these people and have more control over what they do after the video is watched. And I don't have to worry about them being hit with advertisements or scraping their data or something like that. Like, I'd rather keep them in our ecosystem somehow. And then number two, at the very least, I would love for Loom to give us our own subdomain and allow us to have our own branding. Right now, the Loom name and logo is on the video page and you can't add your own branding. So it's all about Loom when a client or prospect goes and watches that video, which isn't the end of the world, but I'd love to have my own branding on there. And I do know that this is an option that they're rolling out in the near future. I'm sure they're going to charge more for it, but I haven't seen anything yet and I'm not really sure what's taking them so long. So I would just love to see at least that second one attacked. I'm not sure they're ever going to let us out of their ecosystem, but yeah. So that's Loom. I also mentioned the Vitaid HD webcam in addition to Loom. Your webcam on your computer is probably fine. You might have the Logitech one or whatever, but Jay Coulter, the host of the Resilient Advisor podcast, great guy, met him in San Diego a few weeks ago. He shared this webcam with me and I just thought it was super cool and it pairs well with Loom because it's video. Not only is this thing an HD webcam, like a small little webcam, and it's super easy to use, but it's also equipped with a ring light. So there's this ring light right around the camera, which lights up your face and gives you perfect lighting for shooting these videos on your computer. There's nothing worse. Actually, I just got off a webinar and half of the people on the webinar, their faces were completely dark. I couldn't even see who they were. There's nothing worse than sending somebody a Loom video where your face is dark and they can't see you. Instead of buying new lights or changing lights or buying these fancy ring lights on Amazon, you can just buy this little $50 webcam and be done with it. So super cool. I thought it was a little unique thing that Jay had found. And I'll link to it in the show notes at taylorschulte.com/13 if you're interested. Tech tool number two, Zapier. Like Loom, it took me way too long to adopt Zapier. I was intimidated by it based on what I knew it could do. And again, I was afraid it would just become like this giant time suck and distraction. And I'm really kicking myself because Zapier is like just the opposite of all that. It's actually incredibly easy to use. And it can literally save you hundreds of hours per year while, and again, this is the important part, while creating a really good experience and a better experience for your end user, your prospects, and your clients. Zapier is really simple here. It connects two or more systems that don't normally integrate or talk to each other. For example, you all know that I use ConvertKit for email marketing. I also use Wealthbox for my CRM. Those two platforms don't integrate with each other. There's no direct integration to talk to each other. But Zapier comes into the picture and changes that. It quickly integrates both of those technology pieces and allows me to automate and scale certain tasks. So for instance, if someone joins my e-newsletter via ConvertKit, and you could apply this to MailChimp or ActiveCampaign or Constant Contact, whatever. If someone joins my e-newsletter via ConvertKit, I can create a Zap that instantly adds them as a new contact in Wealthbox and tags them with, let's call it CK for ConvertKit, CK newsletter. So I know where they came from. And then I can also have a Zap that launches a new subscriber workflow for my team to follow. So maybe when somebody joins our e-newsletter, there's something that we want to do. I don't know. You can automate emails and stuff, but maybe we want to reach out to them individually or send them a t-shirt. I don't know. There could be a gazillion things you could do with a new subscriber workflow. So that used to all be done manually. We'd have to go and like manually create a contact for them in the CRM. We'd have to tag them. It's just someone joins, all that stuff happens automatically with Zapier. Another example is when a prospect schedules an introductory phone call with us through Acuity. I can create a Zap that sends them straight to ConvertKit, adds them as an email subscriber, tags them in ConvertKit as an Acuity prospect so I know where they came from. And then I can create another Zap that creates a new prospect folder for them in Google Drive or Dropbox or whatever you use. So you can stack all these things on top of each other and create multiple Zaps. And then again, you can create a Zap to automatically launch that prospecting workflow. I've shared on the podcast before, we have a giant workflow for our prospects, for our sales process. So you can just automatically launch that workflow. The use cases are really never ending for Zapier. It's such a great piece of technology. To make good use of our time here, I'm going to do this. I'm going to send you two places to learn more if you want to learn more. One, just recently, Wealthbox and I co-authored a blog post highlighting the 5 ways that we use Zapier for the advisor growth community. As you might remember, the AGC, the advisor growth community, Justin Castelli and I started last year. Even though the AGC is not an advisory firm, everything that we do can be applied and repurposed to really any business, any advisor, anything. So I'll link to that article in the show notes. We've got screenshots in there exactly how we're using it. And then number two, Wealthbox and I are hosting a free live webinar on how advisors can use Zapier to attract and retain clients. And that webinar is on March 12th at 2 p.m. Eastern, totally free. And I'll link to that registration page in the show notes as well if you're interested. So I'll spare everybody else on Zapier. If you want to learn more, that's probably the best place to go. Okay, tech tool number 3. This is where things get fun. Email sniper links. So I mentioned at the top of the show that 26% of users who sign up for your email newsletter or lead magnet or free video series, whatever it is, 26% of them will never confirm their email address. And I didn't believe this. I actually looked at my unconfirmed subscribers in ConvertKit. So ConvertKit will show me how many people put in their email address to sign up, but never confirmed as a subscriber. And I did the math, and that 26% number is pretty damn accurate. Now, some of those might be bots. They might not be real people, which is why we want to use double opt-in to begin with. We want to force people to confirm their email addresses. Double opt-in, just in case you're not familiar, is when you enter your email address or you ask somebody to enter their email address on a website, and then there's a message that says, now go check your email to confirm your email address with us. It's good practice because it proves that a user is an actual person, right? They're not a bot. Plus, it also confirms that they're serious about providing their email address and it wasn't just some impulse move. The opposite of that is just giving someone your email address and it immediately says, you're confirmed. That's it. So I prefer double opt-in for those reasons I mentioned. It makes it so you have a really clean email list. You know they're real people. There are 3 reasons that 26% of users will never confirm their email with you. And growth.design laid this out really well, so I'll just take it straight from them. There are 3 reasons. One, there's friction in your onboarding steps. You got to do this, you got to do this, now go do this, now go do this. Like there's way too many steps. So people just stop and they don't do it. There's too much friction. Number 2, spam. A lot of these confirmation emails land in users' spam folder or in the Gmail promotions folder or some other weird folder. They never see it in their inbox. They never confirm their email address. And even worse, they think that your onboarding system is broken. So not only did you lose a subscriber, but you probably lost some credibility along the way. And then number 3, distractions. Your new users, these people that are giving your email address, they might get distracted by other emails in their inbox. So even if you say, hey, go check your email and confirm your email address, they might go and do that. And then they might get distracted by an email from a client or their spouse or a friend or whatever, and then they'll never confirm. You know, this is often referenced or referred to as Hick's Law, where the more choices users face, the longer it will take them to make a decision or may prevent them from making a decision at all. And a sniper link helps fix some of these problems. I've been on the other end of a sniper link before, but I never knew kind of what was being done. And because it works so well, I assumed that there's like some complex code or some piece of software. And I just guess I just lost interest because of that. But I couldn't be more wrong. One of our listeners, the founder of Storyline Financial Planning, Donovan Brooks, he shared with me how these sniper links work and how we can use them. So here's how it works. If you go to taylorschulte.com and you sign up for my newsletter list, you're going to get a double opt-in message that says, hey, thanks for signing up. There's one more thing for you to do. You need to go check your email and confirm the one for me to confirm your email address, right? That's the double opt-in. But thanks to Donovan, I now have a new link there that says, if you're a Gmail user, click this link and instantly confirm your email address. So it removes that added friction from them having to open up a new tab, go to Gmail, and then more importantly, try to find the one from me, which might be stuck in spam, might be stuck in promotions, or who knows where. The sniper link, what it does is it immediately takes them to Gmail, assuming they're logged in, and only shows them your email, nothing else. Even if it's in the spam folder, even if it's in promotions, no matter where it is, when they click that sniper link, it's going to open up Gmail and just show them your email, your confirmation email. It's this special link. It's really easy to get that searches Gmail, their Gmail, for an email from your domain. So in this case, taylorschulte.com, and it only shows them emails from you, even if that email is stuck in spam. I'll link to the instructions in the show notes because it's probably not super easy to say over the microphone here, but just know that it's really easy. There's no coding involved or anything like that. It took me like 2 minutes to set this thing up. My only question for all of you tech nerds out there is, how do we do this for Yahoo and Outlook users? I think if we can cover Gmail, Yahoo, and Outlook, we should have our bases mostly covered. If you know how to create a sniper link for Yahoo and Outlook, I would love to know. I'll keep searching as well. I didn't dive super deep, but I'll keep searching as well. If you find something, let me know. And when we find out, I'll be sure to share with everybody on the podcast. That said, remember that Gmail owns 20% of the global email market and apparently accounts for 27% of all email opens. So they've got a pretty good foothold on the email market. It's worth taking 5 minutes to go find that sniper link and add it to your email confirm page and dramatically increase your subscriber confirms. All right, tech tool number four, we're getting there. Tech tool number four is actually kind of multiple tech tools here. They're all kind of do the same thing. Linkfire, Chartable, Plink, and then there's a bunch of others out there. But this tech tool is really for all you podcasters and or aspiring podcasters. It addresses one of my biggest pet peeves in podcast marketing. As you guys might know, the podcasting world is still very much the wild, wild west. Yes, there are almost a million podcasts out there, but it's still very much the wild, wild west. Discoverability is terrible. All these platforms are fighting to be number one. Podcasts still aren't fully integrated with cars, which really surprises me. Smart home speakers like your Alexas and Google HomePods, they're making good progress with podcast integrations, but consumers are still pretty slow to adopt. So we still have a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of friction in the podcasting world, and it doesn't help small amateur podcasters like me start and grow a brand new show. My pet peeve is when someone provides a link to their podcast in an effort to market their podcast, and it takes the user to a landing page with information about their podcast. So you'll see a lot of these like taylorschulte.com/podcast, let's say, and it's got show notes links, newsletter signups, multiple links to multiple podcasting platforms, subscribe and listen. Like it's just like this big kind of giant confusing landing page with a bunch of buttons and calls to action. Or if they don't do that, they'll post their podcast or podcast episode to social media and then they'll say to listen, click here for Spotify, click here for Apple, click here for Google. And they've got three or four or five different links. Now, at first glance, it might not seem like that big of a deal. It might not feel like there's a lot of friction. You might not quite see why it could cause a lack of follow through on people. But consumers are quick to make decisions. And I just mentioned a few minutes ago, I referenced Hick's Law, that the more choices a user faces, the longer it will take them to make a decision, or the less likely it is that they'll make one at all. So when you've got five links versus one, it does make a big difference in getting somebody to take action. This is where Linkfire, Chartable, Plink, that's where these platforms come into play. Again, there are a bunch of them. I'll try to link to as many of them as I can in the show notes. These are what I call smart link services. They provide one smart hyperlink for your podcast that when somebody clicks on it, it gives the user subscribe buttons to all the major podcast apps out there that you've chosen to be displayed. So for example, you might have found this podcast this way. I use Linkfire. If you go to taylorschulte.com/listen, you're going to see my Linkfire page and you'll see links to five podcast apps, Apple, Google, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher. That's it. No other links, no show notes, no newsletter signups, nothing. Just five very familiar looking buttons. Click the button for the podcast app of your choice, and it's going to immediately take you to this podcast, allowing you to listen and subscribe. Super easy. I could add as many apps as I want to that page, but I try to keep it simple and reduce the number of options. Remember, 95% of listeners these days use Apple, Spotify, and Google, so I'm not terribly concerned about providing a bunch more options. As the podcasting world evolves, I may have to update the list, but for now, I think I'm covering my bases. I think it works great. Along with reducing friction when you market your podcast and getting people to listen and subscribe, I can customize different links for different things. For example, when I link to this podcast from an article that I wrote for, let's say, advisorperspectives.com, I use a special link. The subscribe page, the Linkfire page, looks exactly the same. You wouldn't notice, but the URL, if you look closely enough, it's slightly different. It actually ends in the letters A, D, indicating that that's my Advisor Perspectives link. And what this does is it allows me to see where and how people are finding the podcast. So I've got a custom link for my website, my newsletter, my email signature, when I'm quoted in the media, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere. Every platform has a different, unique link. So if I want to see how people are discovering this podcast, I can check out my Linkfire analytics. This is what I love. By the way, I don't get obsessed with analytics, but I do just like general analytics, and I like to see things moving in the right direction. So I don't want you to get obsessed with analytics, but it is helpful to see. So I looked today to see kind of where things are at, and here's what Linkfire is telling me. 60% of you are finding this podcast through my website, taylorschulte.com. About 11% of you are finding it through LinkedIn, 10% of you through Twitter, and then 9.5% of you are finding it through Advisor Perspectives, where I've written a few articles about the podcast and linked to the podcast. So maybe I want to leverage Advisor Perspectives more in the near future to try and reach and help more advisors with marketing. If I start putting energy there, I can easily track the analytics to see if it's worth my effort. If I start writing more for Advisor Perspectives and I don't see that number change, well, maybe I'm wasting my time. Maybe I'm not in the right place for what I'm trying to do. So it is helpful information. I don't want to over-obsess about it, but I do want to see things going in the right direction. In addition to seeing the channels that people are finding the podcast through, I can see where listeners live, not something creepy, not like Justin lives in Fishers, Indiana. Now you know Justin lives in Fishers, but it'll say something like 5% of your listeners are in New York, that type of data. It'll also share what outlets are referring people to your podcast, what domains, also what percentage are finding it through desktop versus mobile, and then what service they're using to listen. So I know that close to 60% of you are using Apple Podcasts, but I've actually seen that number shrink in recent months with Spotify and Google quickly gaining some market share here. To me, again, the analytics are just a bonus. I love these smart links mostly to reduce the friction and help users find and subscribe to the podcast easily. I want to make it really easy on people. And as I mentioned, I currently use Linkfire. That was the first one that I found and adopted, and perfect is the enemy of good. However, Chartable has this extra feature that really kind of stands out to me, and actually a few features, and I may have to switch here soon. Chartable Smart Link can detect what kind of device the user is on, and you can tell it to just auto-direct them to the native platform. For example, if you click on the Smart Link and it detects that you're on an iPhone, it'll just send you straight to my podcast inside of Apple Podcasts. It won't give you the option to choose Spotify or Google or anything else. It knows that you're on an iPhone, which is pretty cool. Talk about reducing friction here. The challenge is a growing number of users are like me, where I have an iPhone. Actually, I'm all Apple on everything. However, I consume my podcast through Spotify. So that feature might annoy me a little bit and prevent me from subscribing if you auto send me to Apple Podcasts. So something to think about there before you jump on that. Chartable also allows you to create smart links for specific episodes, which is a pretty neat feature. This would allow you to get really creative with your marketing, dramatically reduce friction when you're trying to send people to one specific episode. Also, you know, I talked all about podcasts here. Look, Linkfire was created for musicians, not for podcasters. I kind of repurposed it for podcasting. But smart links could be applied to anything. You could apply it to blogs. You could apply it to books. You could apply it to all other mediums. I do see a strong use case for podcasts, but don't discount it. You can find other ways to use these links and to track and help people find whatever you're producing. All right, tech tool number 5 is Pocket. And actually, I'll be honest, we have more than 5 tech tools today. If you stick around to the end, I've got 3 more that I'm going to throw at you really quickly. But tech tool number 5, the last one I'm going to go in deep on, is Pocket. I use Pocket, but Instapaper works just as well too. If you're not familiar with either of these services, they essentially allow you to save articles, podcast episodes, books, really anything with a URL to read and consume at a later date. Sometimes we come across an article, we just don't have time to read it, or our kids interrupt us or something, but we want to make sure we don't forget. So if you have the Pocket app on your phone or your browser, you can just click the Pocket button or Instapaper, and you can just send it to Pocket and read it when time permits. A lot of people use these apps to save articles to read when they know that they're going to be offline. You're going to be on an airplane, you're not going to have Wi-Fi. You can use Pocket or Instapaper to read things when you're offline. If you want to use Pocket or Instapaper to save articles, ebook highlights, etc., and you want to create a really good system, head over to the show notes page, taylorschulte.com/13, and check out the video that David Perel put together showing you exactly how to use these tools to capture ideas and become more efficient in a world where there is more content than any of us have time for. He's really the master here. Him and Tiago have done a great job putting together this system. So go check that out if you really want to create a system for saving articles, book highlights, and all that stuff. What I really enjoy and benefit from using Pocket for is the ability to create tags. And I have 3 main tags that I'm regularly using these days that really what they do is take away my anxiety of missing out on something or simply losing it forever. The tags that I use are Friday, books, and marketing, and I'll explain. The Friday tag is for a tweet that I send out every Friday called Favorite Finds. And throughout the week, I come across interesting articles or weird, useful tech tools, sometimes unique food items. I shared this tea, this like green tea that I actually drink regularly. I shared that and people loved it. But all these kind of weird, random things that I find during the week, I share them in one single tweet on Fridays. So during the week, when I see something that catches my eye on Twitter or LinkedIn, or someone tells me about it or in a newsletter, I just send it to Pocket and I tag it with Friday. So when Friday rolls around or Thursday night when I'm planning this, I can just open up Pocket and I have hopefully a dozen or so of my favorite finds from that week to choose from. So it makes it really easy. The second tag is books. Pretty self-explanatory. If someone I respect recommends a book, I just quickly send it to Pocket and I tag it with book. So when I'm ready for a new book, I open Pocket and I've got a giant list to choose from. And for me, it just kind of removes that fear of missing out, or more importantly, the fear of just forgetting about that book forever. It just kind of like gets it off my plate and I don't have to worry about it anymore. I know it's there when I'm ready for it. And then lastly, the third tag, marketing. When I come across unique marketing strategies, tech tools like these, or just things that I want to share on this podcast, I send it to Pocket and I tag it with marketing, which makes it really easy for me to come up with these podcast episodes easier, faster, quicker. I'm never short on content. I'm never scrambling. Maybe you can't relate to anything that I just mentioned, but you can repurpose these same ideas for all of your marketing efforts. Maybe you send a weekly newsletter to clients or your email list and you link to 5 of your favorite articles for the week. You read, hey, here are the 5 best articles I read this week. I bet a lot of you are scrambling at the last minute to find those 5 articles. If you use something like Pocket or Instapaper and you create a tag, it's an easy way to improve that process in that system. Maybe you write a weekly blog post and you use other people's content as inspiration, or you want to link to their content. Again, creating a tag in Pocket, send all those inspiring ideas or those blog posts or articles there. Again, David Perel and Tiago have a great system for that. And then you've got it there when you're ready. When you're ready to write that blog post, you've got all this stuff in there ready to reference and link to and write about. So in short, Pocket is just this easy tool to adopt that is going to save you time. It's going to improve your productivity and create just a better end product for your audience. And for me, again, it just removes a lot of that anxiety around missing out on something. Really quick, like I said, I had 5 tech tools for you today, but I really actually have 8. I'm not going to go into each of them really in depth, but here they are as a quick bonus for saying thank you for listening and listening this far. I'm currently using them. I'm testing them. So here they are. The first one is Animals Revive, Animals with a Z. And the jury is still out on this one for me, but this tool, what it does is it will scan your blog, your website for free, essentially scraping the Google Analytics, And it's going to come back with a report and show you what blog posts or pages on your website are losing traction with Google and are in need of an update. I've talked about this before on the podcast. Updating old content is really, really important and can be an easy way to stay on top of your SEO. So this is a free tool that will scrape your website, give you a report and say, hey, some of these pages are falling behind or some of these blog posts are falling behind. Here are the ones you should go in and update. So kind of cool. Again, jury's still out. The second kind of bonus tech tool here is, don't laugh at me, capitalizemytitle.com. I don't know about you, but I struggle with proper grammar, especially with a lot of the projects I'm working on. And when I'm writing titles for blog posts or podcast episodes, sometimes I title case things incorrectly. So what I'll do is I'll come up with a title for something. I'll just copy and paste it into capitalizemytitle.com. You can choose your writing style, APA, Chicago, AP, whatever, and it'll spit out the proper title capitalization. It will also give you a headline score and help you improve the title to make it more clear, more attractive. All that might sound silly to you, but I use it all the time. And it just really helps when I'm pumping out titles for blog posts or podcasts or whatever. Most importantly, just to get the grammar correct and make sure I'm capitalizing things correctly. Number three, it's called highlight links. And so I've talked about do follow links and no follow links on this podcast before. They're becoming less and less of a deal to Google, but I still have an interest in it. When a third party links to my website, maybe I write an article for Kiplinger and they link to Define Financial, I like to know if it's a do follow link or a no follow link. And I won't go into it. You can Google it on your own and see what the difference is between the two. But there's this free JavaScript bookmark for Chrome. You just add it as a bookmark to your bookmark bar. And when you're on a website or a blog post or a page or whatever, you just click it and it highlights all of the links on the page. And if it's a do follow link, it's highlighted in green. And if it's not, it's in orange. So if I'm ever wondering, hey, I wonder if they gave me a do follow link, I just click that button. It highlights it as green or orange. And I know right away. So if you're interested in this stuff, again, I'm getting kind of a little off track here, but if you're interested in it, I'll link to it in the show notes. I found it pretty cool and easy to use. Thank you, as always, for listening today. For all the links and resources mentioned, just head over to taylorschulte.com/13. I'll see you all next month for a fun experiment with Robert, Sophia, and Snappy Kraken. Please shoot me an email, shoot me a message if you have any feedback or want to make sure that we cover something with that experiment. I'll see you back here next month. Thanks again.